Think about a sensory meltdown that you might have. If you're familiar with your own sensory needs, maybe you're in a big crowd or you're in a loud place, or you're maybe claustrophobic and you're in a really tight space and you're starting to feel that anxiety build and that uncomfortable feeling in your gut and your heart. And what does your behavior do? What does your mood do? How does it change?
Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us.
Just a quick reminder before we get started. If you haven't listened to our interview with Alex Doman from Advanced Brain Technologies yet, you need to check it out ASAP. Because after we interviewed him, we teamed up with him and his team to bring you guys a special offer on any of their products, including the listening program. Just head over to our website, thesensoryproject.com/pages/podcast to get started today. And then you can use our code, thesensoryproject, for a discount on any of their programs. We're both certified providers and can help you experience the amazing benefits that come from ABT's programs.
Oh, and we wanted to remind you guys that we have our membership site, The Sensory Project Club, and it is alive and thriving. We are sharing resources, handouts, templates, guides, how-to videos. Oh my word, we could go on and on because we are sharing all the things with our members. So if you want to become a member, just go to thesensoryprojectclub.com and get signed up. We cannot wait to see you guys in there. Hey guys, you are listening to The Sensory Project Show with your friends Rachel and Jessica.
And before we get started today, we just wanted to ask you a quick favor, and that is to leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know your thoughts. Leave us some stars if you like it. And screenshot this episode and tag us on Instagram so we know you're listening. You know, post about your takeaways. Let your friends and family know if you think it's amazing. We just like seeing you guys.
We do. It brings us so much joy. We can't even tell you.
No, yeah. It's hard to find the words.
Yes.
It's true.
So today we're talking about somewhat of a controversial topic.
Yes.
It's more like a topic that we get asked about a lot.
Yes.
This was actually a question from another therapist, and we are talking about sensory versus behavior, and we're going to help you understand the why behind both, and this is almost going to be like a guide for you.
Yeah, because it's really hard for us to answer the question, is my child having a meltdown because of a sensory challenge, or is it a behavioral challenge? That question's hard for us to answer because all children are different. So without knowing your specific child, we can't really answer that question for you. So this is, like Rachel said, a guideline for you to identify the differences and to maybe pick out where your child fits in so that then you can help them learn to cope.
And before we actually dive into this, we want you to imagine yourself. So think about a sensory meltdown that you might have. If you're familiar with your own sensory needs, maybe you're in a big crowd or you're in a loud place, or you're maybe claustrophobic and you're in a really tight space and you're starting to feel that anxiety build and that uncomfortable feeling in your gut and your heart. And what does your behavior do? What does your mood do? How does it change? And then think about when maybe something is bothering you or you want something that you can't have. Adults, we do this.
All the time.
Don't try to tell me we don't, especially with your spouse.
Oh, gosh.
But think about how your behavior changes with both of those. And keep that in mind throughout the podcast because kids are very similar.
But times 10.
Yes.
Times 10,
definitely
sure.
More intense.
Yes. It can be really challenging to identify the reason behind a child's actions. And before we help our child find a solution and problem solve with them, we have to know what the reason is. What's the why? And so then you also want to identify, well, is the why sensory or is the why behavior? Because that's going to change a little bit of your approach.
When we're talking about behavior,
not necessarily a bad behavior, just behavior as a human in general. There's a root cause, and even with a child who has sensory challenges, these kids, every child, every person is driven to, number one, avoid negative stimuli. Number two, seek out positive stimuli they need for their body and their brain to develop. And number three, control their environment.
So children with sensory processing challenges or children without sensory processing challenges, they all attempt to manipulate and control others in their environment or just their environment in general in order to feel control of themselves.
Mm-hmm. So these kiddos who are struggling with sensory processing challenges, they might present more rigid or controlling because children with these sensory differences might literally be at the whim of their environment and they feel out of control and they can't control what's happening to their environment or to their body, which is freaky.
Yeah, it's so scary to think about that, you know, these kids just don't feel like they have any control and a lot of times they don't. Can you imagine not having control of your body?
And feeling uncomfortable in your own skin all the time. I always use that example of the nails dragging on the chalkboard, that spine, like, visceral reaction that I get when that happens. That's oftentimes how these kids feel a majority of the
all
time.
All day long. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then as we are talking about these, keep in mind that a meltdown could be related to both sensory and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind, that it could be one or the other. It could be a combination of both.
Like we said, this isn't a recipe for your specific child or the specific children that you work with. It's just an outline. It's just a guide to better understand what they are communicating to you.
Yes, I like that. I think that's important to remember too, that a meltdown is a communication
mm-hmm.
instead of words communicated to you in an easy to understand way. A meltdown is communication the only way the child knows how in that moment. Mm-hmm.
They are living in their emotions.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk about some of the factors that might contribute if the meltdown or the communication or the behavior is related to sensory. And by sensory, I mean challenges processing the sensory world.
Perfect. Okay. So if a child is having a meltdown or is having a negative action, then this action or this meltdown will continue despite being provided with attention. So, for example, if your child is having a meltdown and you are giving them some attention, you're trying to talk to them, but the meltdown continues, it might be sensory related.
Mm-hmm. If your child attempts to elope or avoid or leave the situation or hide from whatever is going on in their environment, that could be sensory related as well because they're trying to escape that uncomfortable environment. Maybe the vacuum came on and they run away, or you turn the blender on, or the show was too loud during the commercial and they elope. That is a sensory behavior.
Even, you know, I'm just thinking of preferred types of sensory input can become overstimulating to a kiddo if they do it for too long.
Mm-hmm.
So they might try to leave the situation because they're getting overstimulated. And, you know, our initial reaction to see something like that is like, oh, they're avoiding it because they don't want to do it. But it could be more sensory related, that their body wants the input but can't process it mm-hmm. appropriately, so they have to leave the situation.
Yes.
So that's something to keep in mind too. If your child is not easily redirected, then the action they're taking might be sensory related.
Mm-hmm. If their meltdown lasts longer than a typical toddler tantrum, or if you have an older kiddo who has tantrums, it's lasting longer than a few minutes of stomping their feet and throwing their fists on the floor and crying, they're not just forgetting about it and moving on. They are melting down to the point of exhaustion.
Yes.
And complete like disarray.
And then they fall asleep afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be sensory related. A lot of times our kiddos are going to have a meltdown when they're exposed to a new environment or a new situation because it's overstimulating from a sensory standpoint, whether it's auditory, visual, you know, emotional communication, then it might be sensory related.
Mm-hmm. If your kiddo seems to be out of control, that is a time that they might be seeking or avoiding input of a certain kind. They are just spinning out of control. I mean, I'm envisioning kids right now in my head who just can't slow down.
Mm-hmm.
They have very poor impulse control. They are constantly moving. They can't seem to relax.
So these are going to be our kids that we label as the bad kid,
mm-hmm.
where it might not be, you know, an attention-seeking behavior. It might be more sensory-related.
Mm-hmm.
So another example is going to be our kiddos who struggle to communicate their feelings from a certain situation. And this will happen after the situation has occurred, and they still are unable to communicate their feelings or their emotions from that situation.
Yeah, so if we try to have that conversation and say, hey, what was going on earlier? You seem to be really upset about something. Do you know what it was? They would have no idea. They most likely can't say, well, I was having a really hard time tuning out the refrigerator fan and the air conditioning outside, and there was just too much going on that I lost my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be great if they could say that, but most of the time they have no idea.
And a lot of times they don't even realize that they were out of control or that they were having an adverse reaction. They're so unaware of what their body is doing that they might not even realize it.
Mm-hmm. These kiddos might also struggle with transitioning between activity to activity, person to person, away from a preferred place, away from a non-preferred place.
And I think this goes right along with, you know, not being able to self-regulate. So their meltdown's going to last longer when they're going through this transition, as well as they seem more out of control. So they seem like the bad kid who can't, you know, follow adult lead to go to a new task, but really there's a sensory component involved.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about, you know, nutrition and, you know, maybe needing to use the bathroom. And so our kids who struggle with sensory input, they might be hungry or they might have eaten a food that made their tummy upset. And so it causes them to have a meltdown or it causes them to be lethargic. An ability to pay attention, and we just think that, you know, we don't know, but it might be related to that sensory piece.
And we actually did a podcast specifically geared towards the sensory system interoception. So if you're curious to learn a little bit more about that, check that episode out. That might give you some more tools to help understand how your child's body is communicating internally and what the messages are being sent from inside out.
And then one more really quick would be changes in routine. So a lot of times our kiddos really struggle with that flexibility. They get into a routine and that routine's helpful for them. And so if one little piece of it changes, man, it can just send them into fight or flight because they don't know what to do.
So if it's related to behavioral challenges, let's talk a little bit about what we might see, starting with the child will stop the negative action or the behavior when they are provided with attention or the preferred item.
So, for example, you're in the grocery store. Your child wants a candy bar. This happens to all of us, you guys. Mm-hmm. And you tell them no. So they start to have a meltdown. Yeah, and you're like, dang it, I don't want them to have a meltdown in the grocery store. So you give in, you give them the candy bar, and they stop melting down.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably, I mean, it's something we've probably all done at one point or another as a parent, but that would be something that could cause potential future meltdowns that are more behavior related versus sensory related.
And the meltdowns would get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, each time, yes.
Yes, if you held out and said no a little bit longer each time.
So going along with that, they might be having a meltdown or a behavior related to a person, and they're seeking attention from this one person, and their meltdown will stop as soon as this one person gives them attention.
Mm-hmm. This is another big one that we see. Your child will reference the people around them, and they will look at the adult while they are engaging in that negative behavior or that negative action. And they're watching for a reaction. So they're looking at the adult to see, Are they looking at me? Are they watching what I'm doing? Are they seeing that I'm crying and I'm stomping my feet? Oh, they are? Okay, I'm going to keep doing it because it's working.
And I think this is an interesting concept that we don't always think about, but children don't want to be bad. They don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to be mean. It's just not in our nature typically. So when a child is doing this, it can potentially be because they're not getting enough positive attention. And so that can be something to kind of look around and say, am I giving my child attention for the things they're doing well? Mm-hmm. And maybe you are, but the child might not realize it as much. So you need to up your game. Mm-hmm. You need to up your positive reinforcement game so that they will continue to do the things that we want them to do to be successful versus having meltdowns.
But also, we want to kind of steer away from, hey, good job. Nice work.
Yes.
You know, those
general.
Classic general, you know, positive reinforcements. We want to really focus on something that they are specifically doing. And so this is kind of a silly joke that I have with my husband, but I always say, you know, I trained my dog Crash with positive reinforcement. So anytime he'll do something good that I like and I want him to continue doing, I'll tell him. You know, he's a dog, but he's a very smart dog.
And dogs still understand.
Exactly.
The same thing.
So when you're working with this with a kiddo, you know, and the kiddo is working on self-regulating, you could say, man, I'm really proud of you for taking the time to calm your body down. You are doing such a good job of X, Y, and Z. And
be very specific.
Yes, specifically talk about what they're doing well, what you like, and how it makes you feel. Attach that feeling to the behavior, to the action that they're doing, and they will most likely want to make you feel good.
Yes. And then also, yeah, and also reference how it makes them feel. You can, you know, praise them and tell them how proud you are of them, but then you can also say, and it looked like you really enjoyed it as well. Mm-hmm. And then you can bring in that self motivation for themselves of like, yeah, that did make me feel good. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
So then they feel confident and motivated to continue that positive action.
Yes. So if your kiddo is having a behavioral meltdown, they're most likely going to respond to firm and consistent limits or consequences for that negative behavior.
I think the key word here is firm and consistent.
Yes.
It has to be every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has to be very firm, but not like angry.
Yeah.
And, you know, consequence that is associated with the negative behavior,
mm-hmm.
not like not saying, well, you're melting down over a candy bar, so you don't get to watch cartoons.
Yes.
The candy bar and the cartoons aren't really associated with each other. So see if you can come up with some creative ways of, you know, a creative consequence for that negative behavior that's related to what the behavior was about.
Yes.
If that made any
Definitely.
Sense.
I thought so.
Okay, great.
Another one is kiddos who are tired or they're lacking sleep are definitely more likely to throw a fit easier and be more willing to get upset or have a meltdown over something little.
Yes, absolutely. I know I do. Or hungry, right?
Yeah.
Hangry is a real thing.
Yep.
And I mean, I feel like that almost goes into sensory as well, but it's also a behavior because they're so tired they can't handle it. So learned helplessness is, I don't want you guys to get offended. We don't want you guys to feel bad, right? We're not blaming anyone. Everyone is doing the best they can with what they've got. We're just here to give you guys more ideas. So learned helplessness, where the child isn't required to complete things independently, things that they are able to do, but we as the parent do it for them the minute the child starts to complain.
Complain, ask for help, shut down, give up. We just
swoop in.
Yes, we automatically jump in rather than, you know, focusing on, hey, why don't you try it on your own a couple more times and then I'm happy to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, you've got this. You keep going.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Exactly. Don't give up. And then when they don't give up and they're successful, oh my gosh, you have a freaking party for that.
Yes. So this learned helplessness can cause those meltdowns mm-hmm. that I wouldn't necessarily call them a meltdown, just maybe a fit or
a tantrum.
A tantrum, but it's definitely a behavior.
Yeah.
Because they have learned how to be helpless.
Okay, so this next one is actually a typical developmental stage that every child goes through. It doesn't matter if your child can talk or doesn't talk. It doesn't matter if your child is walking or not. It doesn't matter what, you know, where your child is on any sort of spectrum or typically developmental scale. Every single child is going to go through a phase where they push boundaries and explore their ability to get away with things, mm-hmm. essentially, and to have control. And so while we say that this is something that every child goes through, we as parents and caregivers have to make sure that we set limits.
Absolutely.
Because if we let our kiddos get away with everything, they're going to have tantrums and meltdowns when they don't get away with it the next time.
They're going to try to get away with everything.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another one is these kids might be giggling or laughing or smiling while they are misbehaving or doing the negative action, or even after the behavior, they'll laugh about it. So it's not an emotion that matches the situation quite accurately.
Yes. All right. So now our favorite ways to help with any type of meltdown or tantrum. This is going to go for kiddos who are struggling from a sensory standpoint, but also kids who are struggling from more of a behavioral standpoint.
Empathize. You guys, empathize. Understand the why. Find the why. Do your best. Figure it out. And then empathize. And we also talk about co-regulation. That's another word for it. And we, as adults, have the capacity to modify our own behavior and emotional state to reflect back to the child the state that we are wanting them to experience. So if we want them to feel calm, we are going to act calm and talk in a calm, soothing voice. If we want the child to act calm, we're not going to yell at them to calm down. We're not going to tell them to be quiet. We're going to show them what emotion and what behavior we want them to display with ourselves and our own behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's huge because kids imitate everything we do. So if you are doing an action, they're probably going to imitate you at some mm-hmm. point. And then going back to empathy, I think this is huge, especially for our kiddos who are getting mad about something that they want but can't have. I see that you are upset about this. I'm sorry that it makes you upset, but this is the rule. Mm-hmm. And you're firm, you're consistent with what you said, but you're also empathizing and showing that you understand how they feel.
You're kind.
And then you're kind about it. Because, man.
And end the conversation there. Mm. Don't negotiate with them and go back and forth with them. And, maybe next time, you know, just end the conversation.
Never say next time because you know what's going to happen next time.
They're going to remember.
That might be, man, where did I hear this? I heard this somewhere, you know, it might have been from Megan.
Oh, yeah.
Man, she's a genius. If you haven't listened to our interview with Megan, Be Kind Coaching, then you need to go listen to it because she is amazing. Go follow her on Instagram. She gives so many ideas in her stories and her posts. But I feel like this was, she was talking about this, about the candy bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe your kiddo wants the candy bar right now, but they need to wait until after dinner. So just reminding them, hey, I see that you're mad that you can't have your candy right now. I understand. You can have your candy after dinner like we talked about. And then you end it there and you don't take away their ability to have their candy after dinner just because they're melting down. You remind them when they can have it and you tell them if you're still mad, that's okay. You could go take a break if you would like.
Mm-hmm. Such a great example.
I feel like it was Megan. If it wasn't, well, I heard it somewhere.
It was good advice, whoever it's from. Good example. We as adults have the ability to modify the environment to be either more stimulating or less stimulating depending on what's going on in the child's world. So, you know, if your child is young or maybe they're a little lower functioning, they can't figure out how to turn the TV off if it is too stimulating for them. We as the adult need to be able to step in and realize, okay, this is what is making them feel overwhelmed or overstimulated. Let's turn down the lights. Let's turn off the TV. Let's turn on some classical music. Because the child doesn't have the ability yet to modify their environment, we have to help them. Then we can teach the child how to modify the environment on their own. If they're feeling a little bit uncomfortable, they can close the curtains, or they can dim the lights, or they can ask for some calming music. But they have to learn that that's what their body needs.
Yes, I think that's huge, is that, you know, our job, one of our jobs as parents is to teach our children how to, you know, be successful. And one of the things we have to do is how to control our, not control, how to, you know, deal with our emotions. Mm-hmm. And we feel these emotions, they're so strong for our kids. So how can we help our child work through those emotions in an expected way so that they can feel good again? Mm-hmm. So yeah, teach them how to do that.
Yeah. Do you want to try the next one?
Maybe. This next one right here. Fight or flight.
Oh, yes.
They're not going to respond to verbal communication. Okay. So when your child is in a meltdown, whether it's a sensory meltdown or it's a tantrum meltdown, their brain is not going to respond in a cortical manner. So this means thinking, judgment, reasoning. They're not going to be able to process all of those higher level skills, those higher executive functioning skills, because they're in more of a fight or flight place.
Mm-hmm.
And so they probably won't respond to a lot of verbal communication. They might need some visuals to take a break, some sort of visual cue. We said this before, I think, but don't try to bargain with them. Don't negotiate or rationalize to them, but just empathize. See if you can visually help them to a calm place.
Mm-hmm. If you can, I know this isn't always a possibility, but try to remove the child from the adverse stimuli and decrease the sensory stimulation.
Like you talked about just a minute ago.
To a minimum, yeah. So here are some examples you can try. Help guide them to a quiet, calm space with some pillows. Shut them in a Harry Potter closet. I'm just kidding.
We put this in here. So the Harry Potter closet idea obviously is not necessarily a positive association, right? But the idea there is like a small little closet that maybe isn't being used for anything else. Or if it has a little bit of storage in there, you could store some, you know, those things somewhere else and use that little closet space as a calm down room,
mm-hmm.
or a calm sensory space where they can have quiet music, a lava lamp, some of their sensory tools, weighted blankets, that kind of thing, and just have that place for them to go to decompress.
Yes. If you have a younger kiddo who is struggling to regulate their emotions, you can always try wearing your baby or putting them in the ergo carrier or the Mobi wrap so they are getting that deep pressure proprioceptive input, and they can feel your heartbeat, they can feel your breathing, they're there with you, and they are connecting with you. So having that as an option for younger kiddos might be a nice tool to have.
Yes. I feel like we're kind of repeating ourselves a little bit, but I mean, letting your child, you know, take that calm down break and then come back when they're ready and letting them know, I'll help you when you're ready. Mm-hmm. Let me know when you're ready. And then when they are ready, let them know that you're proud that they took that time to calm down.
Yes.
And now you can talk about it.
Mm-hmm. We just like to try to avoid talking about the negative behavior or the negative action in the moment. If you need to take a video secretively of what your child is doing, don't show it to them right then and there.
No.
Wait for your child to calm down, maybe the next day, but then you can show it to them and be like, oh man, I noticed that this was really hard. How do you think we can help you? How would you like to address this next time? What can we put in place? Should we make a calm down kit or something for you to have available when you're feeling this way next time?
And I think this is important to remember that if you are trying these ideas for the first time, your kiddo might not respond the way
yes.
you want them to, right? This is going to take time and practice. It's not going to work the first time or the second time. It might work the third time, but then it might not work the fourth time. So it might not work every single time. You might have to try different things here and there. But the more you do it, the more consistent you are, the more it will help.
Last but not least, it is important to address primitive reflex integration because this can help shift the brain from being in a primitive fight or flight pattern or a fight or flight place into more developmentally appropriate responses to certain stimuli or certain environments or certain positioning. So if you haven't listened to our primitive reflex integration podcast, check that out. If you want to learn more, we are sharing everything you need to know about primitive reflexes in the Sensory Project Club. So it's something that we're very passionate about, and we see connections to a lot of these behaviors and a lot of these negative actions when a kiddo is holding on to these primitive reflexes.
Yes, for sure. It causes so much anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes time to understand, to learn and read your child's body language and cues to help identify whether the action that they're exhibiting is sensory or behavior related. And again, like we said before, it might be both.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a combination. They could have a sensory meltdown on Tuesday and then a behavior meltdown on Wednesday. So
absolutely,
your job is just to watch, learn, interpret, and then help.
Implement.
Yeah.
Totally. So regardless if it's sensory or behavior, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but try your best not to make excuses for them. So here's a little example we thought of. My child can't sit still. They struggle with vestibular and proprioceptive processing, so we don't require him or her to sit at the dinner table with us. So that's almost like a learned helplessness type thing
as
well.
It kind of is, I think so. And okay, let's preface this by saying we all do this at some point or another. Like, all parents are going to do this at some point or another. I've done it with my kiddo, and I catch myself, and I'm like, wait a second.
Oh, boy.
Let's just stop. But I think it's important to think about, okay, so your child can't sit still. Are they going to have to learn how to sit still at some point in their life to be able to go to school, to be able to get a job? Probably.
Yeah,
probably. So at some point, you do need to address it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think at 2 years old, yeah, that's developmentally appropriate for your child not to be able to sit still for very long.
Yeah.
You know, but still, yeah, making excuses for our kiddos doesn't ultimately help them in the long run.
No.
Just like making excuses for ourselves.
Exactly.
It's just like making excuses for ourselves.
Yes. And children thrive with expectations and routine and consistency. So if you can be firm and empathetic, that's going to help them the most. Provide strategies to promote success in this situation. So using the dinner table example, offer them a wiggle seat or a TheraBand under the chair. Use a visual timer so they can see how long they're expected to sit at the table. And that will help them understand, oh, it's not time to get up yet. I still have this much time left to sit at the table and hang out.
And then the other thing too is if your kiddo is struggling to sit still, make sure you're providing them with the input that their body needs to be able to sit down at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Use your visual timer. Let them take some sensory breaks before they come back.
Absolutely.
To finish.
So children with sensory differences and behavioral challenges, they can learn and they should be held to the same expectations as a quote unquote typical child. So the difference is you, the parent, are helping them modify their environment by providing those adaptations when needed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just helping them.
Yeah, and you're teaching them the skills so that they can be successful and independent.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice any of these things with your child, seek out help. Seek out an OT. Seek out early intervention if you have a young child. But, you know, seek out help, ask questions, learn new things so that you can help your child be successful.
Talk to your pediatrician. If they aren't hearing you, talk louder.
Move on.
Find another pediatrician. Find someone who will listen to your concerns.
Yes.
And talk to them about how you're learning about all of this stuff and how you're noticing these red flags and you want to get them help sooner than later, because mm-hmm. we all know it's easier to help these kids learn from a younger age.
Yes. Okay. Anything else?
I think that's all.
Think
we talked about
it.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully you guys got some good ideas. Hopefully you guys can feel positive about this and have some new tricks to try. Maybe you're already trying some of these things and they're working. And if so, then reach out to us and let us know. I'd love to hear your guys' experience on this topic.
We love hearing success stories.
We also like when you guys message us asking us questions. Like, ask us the questions, send us messages, email us, whatever you want.
Yeah, just be in touch with us.
There you go.
We're normal people. We like to help.
It's true.
Yes. Okay. All right. And like we said at the beginning, if you have a chance to leave us a review, that would be fantastic.
It's so amazing.
And we'll see you guys later.
Okay, bye.
We are so excited to work together and to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. This is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, sensory integration, and overall health and wellness. We do not know you or your child, therefore, we do not know any specific needs, therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist.